The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
I am pleased to have with me today a really good friend of mine and somebody that I really admire. As I said before, he's one of the smartest guys in the room. With us today is Rodney Johnson, president of HSDEN, an independent economic research company that focuses on how people spend money and go through predictable stages of life. You probably know that as demographics. If you are not studying demographics, you should. It has a big impact on what goes on in this country. It has a big impact on what companies make, how profitable they are, and thus how profitable your portfolio is. In addition to being president of HSDent, Rodney also serves as president of the HSDent Investment Management Company, an investment advisory firm registered with the SEC. Good morning, Rodney. How are you?
I'm well, Mike. How are you?
Fine, thank you, and thank you for being with us today. Listen, I guess I should start off with let's kind of maybe do a little commercial here. You write something called Survive and Prosper, and it's kind of a daily publication. Is that something available to everybody? Do they need to invest in the newsletter? How do they get a hold of that?
It's pretty simple. They can just go to harrydent.com. It's www.harrydent.com, and you can sign up right there on the front page. And like you say, it's a daily. It's kind of what, you know, flows to the top of my mind as I'm looking out at the landscape. I get up early every day and read a lot of different things. And, you know, whether it's the Cypriots and their crazy things going on or the Federal Reserve or maybe it's sugary sodas in New York, something crosses my mind, I write a story about it. And it's typically news you can use.
Yeah, it is. It is very, very good. And so go to harrydent.com, www.harrydent.com. And get a copy of that. I'll repeat that several times during the show, folks, if you're driving, so I give you an opportunity to get to something to write it down. All right, Rodney, I guess the first thing we're talking about, let's talk about the crazy Cypriots. Very nice. You wake up this morning, you're a Russian oligarch, and you've lost 40% of your deposit. What does this mean, and what's going on over there?
Well, it's, you know, everybody's heard about it over the last 10 days. The Cypriot banks, the two largest banks, were bankrupt. They had more liabilities than assets. And what has happened in the past over the last 3 years in Europe is that the European Union would come in and kind of recapitalize banks. But they chose not to in Cyprus. Instead, they said, no, you had banks go under. Instead of taxing all the taxpayers and everybody out there to bail them out, let's just tell the depositors, if you're uninsured, you're going to take a hickey. That's the way it used to be. That's the way banks are supposed to be, is that if you're investing your money, depositing your money in a bank that is poorly run, you could lose some money. And that's exactly what they did. The problem is it doesn't stop. They didn't stop with saying, hey, guess what? All your money more that's greater than $100,000 on deposit, you're going to lose 40%. They said, by the way, we have no idea when you can take it out. The money that's left is under capital control. The banks don't even open until Thursday. And so there is no visibility for when those large depositors can get the rest of their funds back.
Now, I realize Cyprus is a small place. In fact, I read last week that the total GDP of the whole country is not even, you know, equal to a mid-sized U.S. city. So I realize we're not talking about a big place. But it seems to me like these are very dangerous precedences. That do you think this is going to... this idea is going to expand elsewhere? Because I don't see any panic, and I'm kind of perplexed by that, because it looks like our market's going to open this morning. Europe is up, except for a few locations. Europe is up today. I see no panic out there. Gold is down again. What's going on? Why aren't we concerned about this?
Well, I think that some large depositors are concerned, but nobody wants to run for the exit. When everybody runs for the exit, nobody gets through it, right? We all get trampled and we die. And so instead, you're having large depositors in Greece, large depositors in Italy, Portugal, Spain, those are the ones that are really in question here, are looking at their banks and going, I'm not so sure I want my money sitting there. And when we say large depositor, Mike, it's not, you know, a couple $100,000, $500,000. We're talking about corporations that hold $20 million, $50 million in a bank because they meet payroll, they do contract negotiations, things like that. And so what we're most likely to see are people leave banks that are domiciled in these countries, like a big Greek bank or a big Italian bank, and instead go to a German bank, Deutsche Bank, or maybe a big French bank, or maybe a big American bank. And so I think over the next 3 to 6 months, you're going to see large depositors leave these types of banks, and that is the problem. Because when you lose deposits, your capital ratio gets out of whack, and you have to get rid of some of your loans, and of course they can't. And so this could cause a run on banks of some sort over the next 3 to 6 months as large depositors try to get out without causing too much of a panic. Because if the panic starts, there's going to be capital controls and nobody gets out.
So if we get a run on banks, do you think that will come across the pond and begin to affect our very exuberant nonstop market?
Actually, this is a weird one. And, this is a curveball for a Tuesday morning. It would probably bolster American banks because we have the Federal Reserve that has proven that they will print money ad nauseum to get whatever effect they want. And people would move to U.S. banks because they say, well, the Federal Reserve is willing to print money to save me, so I'm okay. What it is most likely to do is cause our interest rates to go lower. And people will probably think, how in the world can that happen? Well, last year, the Treasury Department passed a little regulation that said they can now issue securities at a negative interest rate. And it's been done in Europe for the last 3 years. Certainly the Swiss have issued negative interest bonds, which is basically charging you to hold their money. And the Treasury is probably going to do that over the next year as people say, well, I'd rather hold my money in U.S. dollars than yen or euro because, frankly, those two are so untrustworthy, I don't know what's going to happen. So it probably becomes a boon to U.S. banks, and it probably means that you and I, as investors and consumers, deal with even lower interest rates.
Boy, that's interesting. There's an interesting concept for you, folks. Negative interest rates, or where they charge you to keep money in the bank. All right, let's talk about gold, because in your Survive and Prosper yesterday, you wrote an interesting article, Newton's First Law of Motion, Why Gold Won't Become Money Anytime Soon. And this is an argument that I have with people when I go and give talks because, you know, the gold bugs out there really want to turn the world into gold again. I think they think they've accumulated enough that they'll be potentates when that happens. But the fact of the matter is that gold is unlikely to be a currency ever again. Is that correct?
Well, certainly in the next, 10 years. I just don't see how it could be. And it's not that gold can't be money. Of course it can be money. Gold has been money for thousands of years. But gold has not been money for arguably the last 90 to 100 years. And the largest issuers of currency on the planet being, of course, us and the Brits and the Japanese and the Europeans and the Russians and the Swiss, we all decided we're not going to have gold be a backstop for our money. We're just going to have it be paper. This means that governments control economies. They have a very tight leash on economies. They will not let go of that anytime soon. Why in the world would they give away such control? It would make no sense whatsoever. At the same time, you and I kind of have to live. We have to go out there and buy bread. We have to go out there and make a car payment. We have to go out there and interact in the business and financial world. For us to try and use gold, silver, or some other coinage to do that would be very, very difficult. And frankly, most people just won't. The article that you mentioned that I wrote, Newton's First Law of Motion, Bodies at Rest Tend to Stay at Rest, that's what I'm talking about. Me personally, I am not trying to use gold as money, even though I hate what the Federal Reserve does with the dollar, because frankly, it's just too hard. I'm kind of too financially lazy to go do that. And most people are as well. They're just not going to go through the hassle and effort that it would take.
All right. So no gold as a currency. And just very quickly, 15 seconds. Do you think gold's a good investment for a portfolio? Do you think portfolios should have gold in it?
I think physical gold to make you feel better about the world going to zero is okay because you just kind of buy it physically, put it somewhere, and hang on to it. Gold as an investment is pretty poor for the next several years, but it's probably pretty good towards the end of the decade.
All right, Rodney. Well, just stay with us. I've got a lot more questions to ask, so stay with us, folks. We've got Rodney Johnson of the HS Dent Corporation. We'll be back in just a few moments.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Welcome back, folks. We have with us today Rodney Johnson, president of HS Dent, an independent economic research firm. And he's also president of HS Debt Management, an investment advisory firm with the SEC. And as I call him, one of the smartest guys in the room. And if you've got a question for Rodney, give us a call at 877-711-5611. That's 877-711-5611. So just give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. Rodney, let's kind of switch topics because interesting thing is there are a lot more articles out there now talking about inflation. But you and Harry have always maintained that we really don't have inflation. We have deflation. Can you address that for us?
Absolutely. You know, inflation is one of those things people look out and they say, well, it means price is going up. Well, that's part of it. That is one part of the component. And we actually have seen prices going up when you look at the cost of energy and the cost of food, certainly, and education and medical care. But the other side of inflation is a general and persistent rise in wages. You have to see people getting paid more. And that's not what we see at all. In fact, what we see is people getting paid less. You look at what's going on with college graduates, you look at what's going on with people who are a little further up the income stream, and they're actually getting less income than they did 10 years ago. And when you look at median wage, we're actually back down to where we were in the early 90s. And so we don't have wages rising because we don't have that general inflationary pressure. What we have is slack demand. And it may sound weird, certainly talking to people in, you know, Texas and people out west who've seen their economies rebound and say, hey, things are kind of feeling pretty good. But you have to look at the overall nation, and it's not that way. We've kind of got this cutout in the middle that's done very well as we've had this energy boom come back, which is fabulous. I'm thrilled to see it. But in general, we have a lower level of demand than we did 3 years ago and 5 years ago, and so we don't need as many people. That's why unemployment remains persistently high, and that's why wages remain persistently low and falling compared to, you know, nominal rates with inflation, is because we just don't have that demand for workers. And so we have a deflationary pressure going on right now, and we saw it with housing, we saw it with assets drop and some other things. What has propped up some prices, and when I say some, I mean those commodities we compete on the global, in the global marketplace for, food and energy and other things, is that we keep printing so much money out of thin air. And so the Federal Reserve is desperately trying to create inflation. They would love nothing more than to see a general rise in prices and wages. Unfortunately, we're only getting one side of it in a very limited way. And so the deflationary pressures are still there. We're still causing it, by the way, as we try to pay down debts and not have as much debt outstanding for our homes and our cars and other things, but we're not getting this general deflation because the Fed keeps printing money. So we understand some prices are going up. It's very narrow, and we're not seeing that general rise in demand for people that would cause wages to go up at the same time.
So why are we seeing a rise in the stock market? Obviously, it's because of Fed stimulus, but you know, we've got the baby boom generation, the largest generation that we've ever had here in the United States, and arguably the biggest impactful generation that this country's ever seen. They're beginning to retire. I know that I spend less. I'm part of that group. I'm 62 years of age. I don't go out and spend as much, and as I get older, I'll probably even spend less. My children, who are in their 20s, can't afford to pick up my slack right now. It would seem to me like we'd be having the market pull back instead of hitting all-time highs. Where's the disconnect coming from?
Well, a couple of things. Companies in the United States did a fabulous job of firing everybody they could back in 2009, 2010. And so we became very lean. And we were able to return to profitability very quickly because our labor laws allow us to do that. And so we matched our production with the demand out there very, very quickly. In some cases, it was painful. I mean, look at General Motors. People say, oh, wow, what a success. Well, is it successful when you fire tens of thousands of people and you get a $50 billion gift? I mean, gee, that'd be pretty successful, too. So we did some pretty amazing things to get from A to B through the downturn with corporations. And then the other side is, not only were they profitable, again, but what else were you going to do with your money but the stock market? And that's really become the case. If you can think of money filling up a balloon, and then you kind of put your hands around the balloon with your fingers outstretched, and you keep filling up the balloon, eventually some of the balloon is going to come between your fingers. It's not generally expanding because we're still holding our economy back because, like you say, we're not spending as much. But we've still got these little pops coming out. And we're seeing it come out in the stock market. We're seeing bubbles in areas like energy. That's a good one. We're seeing bubbles in farmland. It's going into places where you can buy an asset to put your money to work because you're not earning anything in your fixed income account. You're not earning anything in your bank account. And, you know, frankly, there's just very few good uses for money right now, and yet the Fed keeps stuffing money into that balloon as fast as they possibly can. And so it's these different bubbles that we're seeing created out there, and the stock market is just one of them.
And so what do you anticipate is going to happen? What is you, as you look forward, I know that Harry was on yesterday on television, and I think they've labeled him a mega bear or a perma bear or something. I mean, I know that Harry's very bearish. I don't know if you feel the same way. What do you see? What are you telling your folks about where you think the market's going to be headed this year and next?
I tell people, like, I think the market is artificially inflated because the Federal Reserve is printing $85 billion a month. This is $1 trillion a year of newly printed money that just comes out of thin air. The minute that stops, the music stops, and there aren't enough chairs on the floor for everybody to sit down, this will not be pretty and it will not be fun. How long does it go? I don't know. I didn't think they could do this for 3 years, and they certainly have done it for four. And so here we are with the market at all-time highs, but everyone says if the Fed ever stops artificially inducing it, it's going to drop. Well, I think we're within a year of that. I think the drop is at least 20-25%, and I'm telling people to be very, very cautious.
Okay, so you would tell them to lighten up. Where would you tell them to go? I mean, you've got it sounds like from what you were saying earlier that we might actually get a bond rally. The 10-year is around 2% or so. It could go back down to 1.4 was it where it was before. Could it even go even lower than that in terms of yield?
It could. I wouldn't be chasing a bond rally too far because the gains just aren't very big. I wouldn't be so quick to lighten up if I had it because I do think there are gains to be had, but I wouldn't be chasing it right now. We're much more interested in areas like dividend-producing securities, particularly in energy. We think the transfer of energy, being pipeline companies, are good places to get some strong dividends that will continue to pay off. And we've written about these over the last several months, where we're just looking to say, wait a second, you want to protect streams of income right now. Don't be so caught up in gains. Look at streams of income because you're going to be much more interested in having that cash show up in your account than maybe playing for a 10, 20, 30% gain when the market takes a dive.
All right. So, yeah, and I agree with you. I think that dividend-paying stocks, particularly in the energy segment and a lot of the MLPs, these master limited partnerships, which are a little more complicated. And folks, if you get into those, you're going to have to, I think, do a little more research. But yeah, those look like good areas. Any place else that you would recommend that folks invest right now? Where are you putting your money, Rodney?
I put my money in these exact things that I tell people about. You know, the same types of securities that are paying these dividends. And as I told people for a long time, I think municipal bonds are a good idea. There was a recent scare in muni bonds because there's a proposal out there to tax them for people who have a lot of income. That's going to be DOA. It's never going to happen. But I think you got a little bit of a pullback in price, which means a little bit higher interest right now. And frankly, taxes aren't going to go anywhere but up. So anything you can do to shelter your money from taxes right now is going to pay off in bigger and bigger dividends in years to come.
All right, I've got about 15 seconds. How do people get a hold of you, and how do they get a hold of the Dent organization? And www.harrydent.com, is that the place to go?
Harrydent.com, you can sign up on the front page for a free daily.
All right, great. Listen, thank you, Rodney Johnson, for being with us today. We really appreciate it, Rodney. And looking forward to seeing you in a couple weeks at the Dent meeting. All right, folks, be back to you in just a few moments. Stay with us.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.